Welcome to WRTI's Classical Stream, made possible by contributions from listeners like you. Learn more at WRTI.org.
We have with us today a returning guest, one whom we are delighted to see once again, pianist Dan Franklin Smith. Dan, welcome back to Crossover.
Thank you so much, Jill. It's really a pleasure to be back here again.
Yes, it's several years, and of course you have been doing many, many exciting things, and that's what we're going to talk about today. You are now involved in a lot of work abroad, is that right?
Well, in terms of an organization that I am now music director for the past 4 years, called Elysium Between Two Continents. It's based in Germany, but they work in the United States and Germany, hence Between Two Continents. I became music director in 2005, and this will be my fourth year. We present concerts at a summer festival south of Munich in a beautiful Bavarian town called Bernried on Lake Starnberg. And we do, part of the program is a summer academy for young singers where they study German music literature and perform it in a concert at the end of their week there. And they also study with dramaturgs and diction specialists in the German. And then the other part of the season with Elysium is presenting music, and we've been trying to focus on music, so-called Entartete music, of those composers that were banned or stifled in some way during the whole build-up of the Nazis, the National Socialists, during the 20s and the 30s into World War II.
That seems to be a trend now to uncover some of the great music that was banned.
Well, I agree with you, and I agree with your use of the word trend, although when it sounds like trend, I get very nervous.
Well, no, but
that,
I
that
think
it's going to be something that in 6 months or a year, people will say, well, I've had enough of this, so.
Well, it's a matter of conscience in many cases, and I think it's a matter also of discovering art as one sees through the centuries, that art that was perhaps reviled at one point or banned was again rediscovered in another century. And of course you find that in many aspects of the art world. But this, of course, is very tangible, I think, to musicians. And also there is a great deal of very wonderful music, which was quite progressive and foresaw the beginning of the contemporary music scene in the early 30s, I think. And of course, this spans that whole period of time when this was all building up and then the music was banned. And so I guess this exploration is yielding a very rich repertoire.
The variety of the repertoire is really quite astonishing. Some of the composers did explore the jazz idiom. Others adopted the serial technique and continued with that. Others were more eclectic and ventured into, let's say, friendly atonality. Some into very wild atonality. Others were quite conservative and wrote in a Richard Straussian mm-hmm. Romanticism that was beautiful and accepted. I mean, the variety, the cauldron of different styles in Germany. Since we're speaking about Germany, particularly during that period, the 20s and the 30s, just up to the war, is just quite astonishing.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
Now, you yourself are, of course, a pianist, and the components of the group that you have that work under this Elysium umbrella,
right,
is this chamber work, or are they soloists, or is it a combination of various ensembles, depending upon the music?
Elysium... last year was the 25th anniversary of Elysium. It was founded back in the early 1980s by Grigori von Leitis, a German director, actor who came to the United States, founded his theater company called Elysium. It was very successful in Lower Manhattan in the Lower East Side theater district during the 80s and into the 90s. Then he decided to go other directions and started this summer program teaching young singers to work with the German language in the classical repertoire.
But of course, there's diction and pronunciation, and
right?
So on.
Plus a way of presentation, because his style as a German director is often very different from what some of the American directors do. And so a young American singer will be in the program. They'll go over there. They'll have an aria that they know and love, let's say, by Mozart or von Weber or some other German composer, and they have an idea of the character. But when it's taken out of the context of the opera, Grigori redirects it. He puts it in a scenario with disparate arias from other operas. I choose the music, but these are put together in a scenario, so you have a mini opera mm-hmm. with maybe as many as 8 composers contributing to this okay. opera. So there's a scenario that he creates an idea, so there's progression within
of what
this,
is going on
what's going
musically.
On.
Yeah,
right.
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating.
So when he started this program back in the mid '90s, and that's continued, and continues now. Then he expanded it to have programs with singers and piano. It's a small venue, so we really, quite honestly, can't afford to have chamber ensembles, but we have piano and singers. And he puts together collage, where there will be text relative to the period of the music being presented,
okay.
and then maybe some solo piano music, and then some songs that are relevant, and some more piano music, and then some readings, and the audiences there love it. And we present them in New York, too, and it goes over very well.
And, of course, it's a wonderful mm-hmm. educational thing because it really gives you the sense of what was going on at the time in all areas of the arts.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Tell us a little bit now about this Remember for the Future. That's, I guess, the title for this whole
Let me backtrack just a little bit. Grigori, as an actor, in recent years now, has been performing a work that it's by Rilke. Rainer Maria Rilke wrote a novella, I believe, called The Tales of Love. It's a small novella about a history of one of his ancestors who was in the 30 Years' War. And it's a very grim, very thrilling, and very beautiful text, which the composer Victor Ullmann, who was one of the many composers and artists interned at Terezin, later killed in Auschwitz, wrote for performance at Terezin. It was for piano and speaker. So Grigori and I last year, along with the program director who did a lecture about Ullmann and about Terezin, we did the performance of that in Bernried and then went on tour and performed it in London, Brussels, a number of cities in Germany, and we'll be going this May to Warsaw and Lodz in Poland and to Kiev under the sponsorship of with the help of the German government, presenting it to those audiences there.
Now, is it in German?
Yes, it's read in German, yes. As a German actor, I mean, it's very beautiful.
When you would do that, say, if you did it in the United States,
in the United States, there would be a printed translation.
Mm-hmm. But still,
certainly,
as in an opera, sung in the original language.
As an opera, yeah, it really works very beautifully. But to get back to your question about the new program that we're putting together now, Remember for the Future, will be commemorating the beginning of World War II in 1939. And for this, we are gathering readings and works by composers from the period, some who fled Germany and fled Europe in time for racial reasons, for political reasons, some who went into internal exile within Germany, who might not have any racial reason to leave but were totally posed and disappeared for a while. Others came to the United States, flourished. Others were killed in the concentration camps. So it's a wide variety of what this diaspora of mm-hmm. not just Holocaust but of World War II created in terms of the musical arts and the writers.
And this is in the process of being put together.
It's being put together now. We'll do the first performances in Bernried and then take it to a few places in Germany following the festival, and then we'll perform it in New York in October.
Now, you, of course, Dan, are initially a pianist. I mean,
I think first and always a pianist.
you're a musician, and you live a musician's life. Mm-hmm. This is probably a very exciting, what can I say, other commitment for you. But are you concertizing as a pianist?
Well, just before I answer that directly, I when people say, well, what do you do? And I say, I'm a freelance pianist. If I say I'm a concert pianist, their assumption is, well, I have two concerts a week all year round, which is not quite the case. I do such a variety of things. I work for the opera department at Manus and am thrilled to be one of their, to be the rehearsal pianist for the operas. I've learned so much from opera and singing over the years about music and how to perform music as a pianist. So,
and where did you study? That. Where did you study piano?
I had my college training at University of Michigan and then worked privately in New York.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of solo concerts, this year I did a concert of, first half was mixed German repertoire, Bach, Busoni, Liszt, and Schumann. And the second half was all American composers, some with some definitely jazz influence, a Dave Brubeck piece.
Oh, yes.
Andre Previn.
A great pianist, by the way.
Great pianist. Really? Andre Previn and Brubeck.
Yes, both of them.
And I'll be performing different program next year, including some of the American music, with music of Busoni, and because Chopin's second 100th anniversary is coming up.
Oh, yes.
That'll be unavoidable. So this year I did a concert out in Michigan and where else was it? Out in Wisconsin.
And what about Europe? Have you given any piano?
Well, I did a solo recital of German music last summer in Bernried, and we'll do an all Busoni program in Bernried this June. Next year I'll be performing at the National Gallery, and I'm doing a recital tour out in California. And then I have some isolated concerts at different venues around.
You also did some
coast.
Scandinavian music. We have recordings that you've done, which are just marvelous.
The one thing about being a freelancer is that these areas of interest, when I was doing the Scandinavian music, I thought, well, this could be a whole life's commitment. Oh, mm-hmm. And then the German theme came up, and the Antarctica music came up, Antarctica. And
that's two lifetimes.
It's two lifetimes. So I have to focus and take my focus away. I mean, I'd love to get back to the Scandinavian music.
But tell us, how did that come about? I mean, Atterberg was not that well known here, even in the musical circles. And then it's kind of a discovery. His music is just so exciting.
No, what I'm discovering, a lot of the very successful localized European composers, also like the Huber, the other concertos that I did, they were extremely well known in their time locally in their country. Atterberg in Sweden and Huber in Switzerland. But for whatever reasons, their music did not travel a lot.
But how did you discover?
I was in Sweden through some connections doing European, some recitals in Stockholm and outside Stockholm. And at the time, an inquiry was made about my interest in performing with an orchestra in Stockholm, not the big orchestra, but a smaller orchestra there, and I said, I'd love to. And they said, well, next year happens to be Stockholm being the European city of the year, which goes from around Europe now. And so it'll have to be a Scandinavian composer. And so I was starting from ground zero and went to Lincoln Center Library, of course, in New York, and explored, saw what pieces were around, what was available. Some of them people were very familiar with. And here they were, the composers' names, not to mention their music, were completely unfamiliar to me. But I found the Atterberg and was told, well, this would be a very good choice. And then coincidentally, after I finished playing the Atterberg, it got a little bit of press. And a recording company had been planning to do it and had lost their pianist because of a physical injury. And
there you were.
There's the story.
Isn't that wonderful? Be prepared constantly, right?
Absolutely, yes.
And the Huber...
The Huber was the same record company in Sweden, Sterling Records, which at the time was focusing on doing premiere recordings of underappreciated works. And these works had come up, two concerti by Swiss composer Hans Huber, the late Romantic composer, died in 1924, I believe. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I was given permission to examine them, but I thought, my goodness, this is fascinating, sort of a cross between Brahms and Saint-Saëns.
And decided, what a great recording.
And so I decided to spend a lot of time learning them.
So then we look forward to all kinds of discoveries on your end. I mean, you're really discovering, aren't you?
Well, I'm probably making up for the fact that in college I was not a very good researcher. And when we had to do projects, it was a thing I put off and did the minimal amount of research. Now with the opportunity and the access to Lincoln Center and Library of Congress and the Internet, of course, I'm able to find composers I'd never heard of, find music that maybe 15, 20 years ago was not published and now is published. And but still is not performed a lot, and it's very rewarding to mix that even in programs, concert recital series around the country. When they've been approached, their response has been, well, yeah, do you play wild music or atonal music? And so those pieces that would be, I think, interesting performance for an audience to hear as a new work. I have to be very cautious about it. I try to slip in something.
You need a festival for that. But it's very interesting that I think I spoke to someone not too long ago. We said it takes about 100 years for a composer to become really comfortably accepted in society. And that includes the very knowledgeable musicians and musical community. But it's certainly for performance, we're still, I guess our audiences around the country are eager to learn, you know, new repertoire, hear new repertoire, but it's something that you have to really be careful when you program.
I think if there, and this sounds kind of saying they don't mean it this way at all, I think there is an educational process which needs to be done with concerts to present the music before hearing it, to take it apart in sort of a gentle manner to present it, not sort of to say, here it is, like it.
Or not.
Yes.
Well, Dan, so there's a great deal to talk about with you, but in any case, now this Tuesday, the 6th of October, you will be performing in concert at the Weill Concert Hall at Carnegie, and the concert is entitled Remember for the Future. Can you tell us a little bit about the music that you might be playing or the composers you will be referencing in the concert?
Yeah, among the composers that survive and become iconic and popular, some of them went through phases of complete disappearance and then came back and then became standard. There's always that risk with anybody in the arts, a creative, a writer, a composer like that. What's interesting about the whole period, interesting and horrifying about the whole period of the 20s and 30s, is that very often the material, the writings, the compositions by the individuals, it wasn't just an issue of no longer being popular, but active efforts to stifle their creative efforts, and often by killing them or their families, destroying the actual work itself. So one of the composers who fled Vienna and survived, Egon Lustgarten, born in the late 1800s, died in the early 1970s, very conservative, beautiful composer. We premiered excerpts from his opera written in the late 1920s, which never got a premiere because Germany started falling apart at that point culturally. But later on, his daughters located Elysium, or through connections, said that they would like Elysium to be the executors of his musical estate, which gives us the opportunity to offer the opera around, premiere other works by him that are still in the archive, still in manuscript. What's something I try to encourage people is if they had family members who fled Europe, either for racial or political, for whatever reasons, and had music, had writings that were suppressed, and they might find them in a box and say, well, this was written by my grandfather in 1925, and later we don't know anything about it. Have it checked out.
How would they?
send it to us. Or
how would they do that?
Elysium BTC.
Elysium
yes. BTC, Elysium Between Two Continents, at AOL.com. And people are certainly welcome to inquire, not only about our organization, but to if they know of music like that. you know, if it's music, I'm happy to travel to check it out. You mm-hmm. know, you don't have to send it to New York. Mm-hmm. But sometimes, as with an institution like the Leo Beck Institute, some of the composers they have in their wonderful archives, just incredible archives of composers from Germany, Austria, principally from the composers from that period who had to flee or died, a manuscript will come in, and then some of the family member or someone else will find several manuscripts and send them in, so the archive keeps getting bigger and bigger.
Yes.
And then once it's there, even if it sits for a while, it can be checked out and eventually get the publication or performance that it deserves at least once to give it this chance for survival.
It's a marvelous, marvelous idea. And for further information about that particular aspect of submission, you can also call us here at the station at WRTI and we'll get you further contact information. What do we have to look forward to in terms of your perhaps recording or doing these performances here? You've spoken about you will be doing some of them in New York. Is that right?
The Elysium Concerts, the Summer Academy, does an annual concert at the Austrian Cultural Forum, which is a beautiful 99-seat little gem of a hall with a Bösendorfer piano in Red Cross of St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York City. So the young artists will present the concert we did in Baron Reed there in the fall. We'll present the Remember for the Future concert at Weill Recital Hall.
That's at Carnegie Tuesday evening, October 6th, right?
And then we'll present that again at, I think, also in January. And there's another commemorative day relative to the Holocaust, which will be in January on the 27th next year. And I have my solo concerts various places during the year, and then preparations for the following year.
And on it goes.
And
lucky are you and lucky are we that we have found you and we found you again. And just promise to keep us updated and return to Crossover again.
Honored to be back, and we'll definitely keep you in touch.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with pianist Dan Franklin Smith.